PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a fresh episode of Off Course. I am your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on social at CanadaAndGolf. You can also find Off Course on social at OffCourseTHP on Twitter. With me today, this isn't actually the first episode of 2021, even though it does feel like that, because the first one dropped, I believe, on New Year's Day. But I'm very excited to have my friend Josh Talge on from Titleist. He's the VP of marketing over there. You can find his personal Twitter at JTalge. And obviously, you can find all the incredible activity over on socials with Titleist there. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. And how are you?
Yeah, I'm pumped to be on. It's great to see you. I realize not everybody else can see you, but great to hear from you. And it's a interesting January we're in, where for the first time in a long time, I'm not packing up and going to Florida for weeks on end. This is kind of our big month of, we have some big retailer events. We typically have a large sales meeting in Florida, and then we've got the PGA show. So these big tentpole events. And I spend some years, spend upwards of like 20 days in Florida in the month of January. And this year, grounded a little bit. We're doing everything virtually.
That must be different. It's definitely a topic I wanted to touch on today. Maybe not right out of the gate, but I feel like it's on the front of your mind because, the PGA show, the activities that you guys have with all the releases, and obviously a lot of people in, let's call it the Canadian states, aka Ohio and likewise, where we can't actually golf and we'll take any content we can get. What is different for you guys and how are you sort of weathering that storm at Titleist?
Well, I think, your first point of just like, hey, this is the time of year where it feels like you're a little cooped up in certain states. And I grew up in Minnesota, so I totally know the feeling. And you and I have chatted this before. I lived in Cincinnati for a few years, so I know what it's like to have those Midwest winters. And I remember being so excited to turn on the TV and see golf in Hawaii, right? And I think this week feels like we're getting back to like, this is, it's obviously it's a wraparound season, but it feels like this is the start of the season when you see these guys playing, in Kapalua, and it's just incredibly gorgeous and you get fired up about where golf's going. And so very excited to get that going. And then the question on, what are we doing? How are things different? The biggest one is we've just had to learn different ways to connect with our own teams, whether it's me with our sales teams, virtually leveraging a ton of technology. We've been filming a lot of things, sending guys videos. We do a lot of, just like I'm sure like everybody else, a lot of, whether it's Zoom calls, we use Microsoft Teams a lot. And I'm really impressed with how all of our groups have gotten on board with it, to the point where we're very effective this way. I personally yearn to be back in the office full time. I'm in the office a lot because it's convenient for me and it's safe for me. But I'm excited when we can get more and more people back in an office place. But right now we're doing everything we can and doing pretty well being remote. The big challenge is some stuff can't be remote. Like we assemble all of our clubs for North America here in California. And so you can't remotely assemble a club. So we've got our teams in here working, as hard as they can through all sorts of, new safety protocols. And I'm so impressed with our operations team about how they've been just so willing and able to find new ways to make sure that A, we keep everybody safe, and B, we're making golf clubs, because as listeners know, golf is seeing a resurgence and an excitement from the second half of 2020 right into this new year, where people are playing golf at an unprecedented rate.
Yeah, I tried to book a tee time in Ohio in the middle of December at my home course. It was like a Thursday afternoon. I think it was going to be like 45 degrees, and I got shut out. And I'm like, what world are we living in? And anyone who tells me the golf is dying is obviously off their rocker, because that's crazy here. Yeah. And it's nice to know that companies are feeling that in a positive way. I like that you referenced your operations there in California, because we did have a chance to walk through it at one of the THP experiences that I came and supported. Obviously, TPI is a whole different conversation, which was a ton of fun. But walking through your operations at HQ there, seeing the way that people I think it was the custom order section, the unbelievable work they're doing. You have another area where you're spot checking heads in various locations to make sure that they're on the up and up, as you would say. Has it been strange for them to try and sort of accommodate all the new regulations and expectations that are coming in?
Well, again, our team first and foremost sat down and was like, what can we do to make sure everybody's safe? And how do we work with that as our starting point? And then once we've got safety nailed, how do we be efficient? Because you mentioned, you know, just custom, and custom is such a big part of our business. Upwards of 80% of all the irons that leave our facility are custom, right? We're at about 60% when it comes to metals. So this is a huge amount of custom business. And typically we have as little as like a 2 to 3 day turnaround for custom orders from when we get the order to when we put that thing on a truck and it's going out to you. And two things, you know, have slowed us down a little bit this year in that. And then the first is COVID, because we can't have as many people working in the same spot at the same time and still be able to have all the social distancing protocols that we need in place. So we've had to kind of spread people out and move things around. And so we're not quite as efficient as we used to be, but we're finding other ways to make up for that. And then the second one, we were just joking about how you can't find a tee time. And that is really putting a incredible demand on the business, where, you know, certainly we've heard that there's a lot of new golfers that are taking up the game, or kids are joining their parents, things like that. But what we're also seeing is the hardcore golfer, that dedicated golfer who has always loved golf, has like doubled down. And yeah, they used to play, you know, twice a month. Now they're playing 6-7 times a month. You know, or they played once a week, now they're playing 3 times a week. And so that guy is typically who we, you know, spend a lot of time talking to, and is usually the big Titleist fan. And so we've seen just tremendous demand for our products. So the team has done an incredible job figuring out how can we still supply and keep these really quick turnaround times, but do it in the right way, the safe way. And then obviously QA, you know, you mentioned the way we check heads. We like to believe that we build golf clubs better than anybody else. And if we're going to put the name Titleist on there, it has to nail this standard of excellence. And so we really have a very rigorous process for that. And all of that is still in place, because we're not going to cut any corners just because we're living in a pandemic state.
Sure. You definitely showcase a passion for the game that I appreciate personally. And I don't know that I fully know your own golf story. I mean, you grew up in, I believe, Minnesota. Did you get started in the game early?
So in Minnesota, it's a great state for anything outdoors. But what's really interesting, if you poll Minnesotans, I think Minnesota might actually have the highest per capita of golfers. But what's interesting is they're golfers during what is a traditional golf season, and then they immediately switch to other things. So everyone grows up playing lots of different sports. There's hunting and fishing, snowmobiling. Everything is about how do you take advantage of the outdoor activities that are afforded you during the four seasons. And really, there's only two seasons in Minnesota. There's ice and cold.
I was going to say, it's hockey and golf season. Those are the two seasons, right?
Exactly, yeah. And they both kind of, you know, unfortunately, the golf season's pretty limited. Mm-hmm. But so I grew up, I played, you know, just completely for fun, never in anything, you know, tournament style golf. I played a lot of football and basketball, ran track, you know, through high school. And then I always loved golf, but I was still obsessed with, you know, trying to be really good at the other sports. And they take up a lot of time, and so does golf. And it wasn't until I was in finishing college, and when I went back to business school at Notre Dame, that I really played a lot of golf and really became kind of obsessed with it. And then was fortunate to, out of business school, I worked for Procter & Gamble and worked on a lot of different brands. And a few of them, there were some tie-ins to to sports marketing. Certainly on Gillette, we were doing some stuff. We were sponsoring the, we were partnering with Target. They were doing the Target World Challenge with Tiger Woods and his event. So I was able to kind of start to see how we could maybe transition in there. And I worked on Old Spice, which was, again, focused more on, you know, we did a lot of stuff with NFL and things like that, but it was a way in to start to see how does sports marketing work instead of just traditional CPG marketing. And then when the opportunity came up for me to get into the golf space, I jumped at it because, I mean, you know, I'm just a golf obsessed person. And now certainly being here at Titleist, it affords, you know, for your listeners who tend to be kind of gear junkies, it's an awesome space, you know, because I get to spend so much time really in the weeds on what does new product development look like? You know, what do we want this top line to be? What do we want this offset to be? How are we doing the sole development on these new irons? You know, on our metal woods on TSI, how do we want to make sure that we've got a driver that sits, you know, square at address, but it really looks like that toe runs away from you. So you never even think about it going left. Being able to be in all those little details is just a blast.
Well, you get to know a person pretty well in the golf industry, depending on how much product they have in their office. And I can see in the background, and it's exactly how it was the last time I was in your office. There is stuff, which means you're just like we are. And I love that. What's in the bag for you right now? And what are you playing to?
I actually played a little bit of golf this summer, which was really fun. Like we just talked about, it was everybody got out and played a little bit more. And so I got my handicap for me to a career low, and now it's since bounced back up. I had a nice run. I visited Ohio this summer, and that really kind of kicked off a good bit of golf for me. And then I got back here to our Poa Greens, and my index has crept up a little bit. I think right now I'm sitting at like a 2.5, I think, if we look it up on the SEGA thing, trending in the wrong direction, which is great. But in my what's in the bag, I'll go tee to green. I've got a TSI 3 driver, 10 degree. I've got a Ventus Blue 7S shaft. I play a little bit shorter. I play it at 44 3/4 inches. And because of that, I tip the shaft a little bit. So shaft is tipped. I think it's 3/4 inch tipped
and heavy. Nice
and heavy. Yeah. And again, this is one of the things I would recommend to people. You know, fitting is really important. And when I did my fitting, what I realized working with our team was when I went lighter shaft, yes, I could pick up a little bit of speed, but I tended to my angle of attack. One, I was hitting too high up on it. And two, I was coming too much from the inside. And thus I was fighting a snap hook too much, but with a little bit of weight, suddenly I balanced out both of those things and could get significantly more consistent content and or contact and a straighter ball flight versus the hard right to left. And so a little heavier there. And then I've got matching Ventus in my TSI 2 fairway wood, 15 degree. And then I dropped down to a 21 degree fairway wood. I use that as an incredible club in the bag. I found that I can get a little bit more height with that versus with a hybrid, or a really strong lofted utility. And that has helped me immeasurably because I end up playing, you know, whether it's some really difficult, really long, you know, 220 yard north of that par threes to be able to get into, or on some, you know, longer par fives or really long par fours. If I've got that in, it's a really great club. So I would highly encourage people to look at high lofted fairways, you know, to see what they can do. And then I drop down to, I've got a U500 four iron. And in all my irons, I'm using the new Project X IO shaft.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like it. I like it primarily because it reminds me a lot of another Project X shaft, the PXI. Very similar in characteristics to that. You know, a nice weight to it. I think it's like 112, 115 grams. So it's not the heaviest, but it's also just, it has a tremendous feel for me. I love it. So I use that through my iron set, which is T100S. So I have that in 5 iron through 9 iron. And I switch into Vokey for my pitching wedge, and I play Vokey wedges throughout. So I've got a 46, 50, 54, and then 60. And with my 60, I actually am right now using an A grind, which is one of our Wedgeworks grinds, an Aaron Dill inspired grind, which is really kind of cool. It's a very old school sole that's just really, really clean, real versatile. It doesn't have any hard, you know, lines on it, which I really like. And then, so I'd like to have a little bit of bounce in my sand wedge. So I've got a 54-14F in that. So I've got a little bit of bounce there. And then obviously full soles in the 50 and 46. And then I'm putting with a Cameron Futura 5.5. I really like that. It helps me, you know, it's a little bit forgiving when I need it. And it just helps me make sure that I've got my putt starting on the right line, which is important for me.
So I have so much to say about what you just told me. First of all, anyone out there listening and thinks they spend too much time considering or changing or reviewing what should fit in the bag, I think JT's done a nice job here of reminding us that there's no level of fitting that is too much. So I love that. What would you think if I said to you, I had a conversation with Josh Babbitt, JB over at Hackers Paradise, that fairways don't need to exist in golf?
Oh, no. I know that I've been with him on this because I know that he has a short shafted driver that he uses as a fairway, and he hits it fairly well. So he's a unique case in that he can deliver that club in a way and still generate launch, lift, and spin with it. Most golfers can't, you know, and so I think a fairway would, and again, this is the great part. When you start talking about the top end of the bag is where things get really challenging, right? The two opposite ends, you got 14 clubs, right? They all need a purpose. Well, driver and putter, those are the easy ones, right? Just put those in. Now you've got 12 clubs to get all your scoring in. The reason why I like to say, hey, err, if you're going to err on something, go with too many wedges. Because at the end of the day, that's where you want to be really surgical. Right. Like if you're, let's say you're 220 yards out and you're hitting your, you know, maybe you have a utility iron or you've got a hybrid or you've got a high lofted fairway, as long as you hit the green, all of your friends in your group are going to be like, hey, good shot, Dan. Right. Like, you know, as long as it's that, like, a two tiered green, you're on the wrong end or whatever. Sure. But in most cases, you hit the green from 220 away, your playing partners, you play golf with a lot, are going to be like, good one. That was a good shot. Right. But it's very different once you start to think about your 130 yards in and you're looking through your wedge game. Right. At that point, then you really want to make sure that you're, you know, whether you're below the hole, you're on the right tier of the green, you're on the right side of the green. You want to give yourself, that's a real scoring club, and you want that precision there. And so I think that's why I want as many people to, you know, err on that side, have more wedges. And then the reason I chose, you know, on the top end of the bag to go with fairway is I looked at all the other options. I played a hybrid for a long time and I liked it, but I just couldn't quite get what we refer to when we talk about fitting, we talk about the three Ds. So you want distance, you want dispersion, so that tight pattern, and you want angle of descent. So that's the third D, descent. And we always want an angle of descent of 45 degrees or higher. Because if it's coming in at more than 45 degrees of an angle of descent, you're going to hold greens. Mm-hmm. And that's really important with any of those clubs because they are scoring clubs. You're trying to, you know, pick a number and have it go that number. And so the reason I ended up going with a 21 degree fairway wood was I can hit that a mile in the air. And it's very forgiving for me. It helped me get rid of the lefts. Which I struggled with a little bit with a hybrid. And I know that some other players have the same thing where they get a little toey and you can get a little snappy with it. And I didn't have enough speed with like a 2 iron or a 3 iron to get me the type of launch conditions I needed to be able to get the ball in the air. So the 21 degree fairway worked excellent for me. But then because I'm in that space where I've got a driver, a 3-wood, which I kind of turned into about a 4-wood, then down to the 21 degree. That saves me room to have 4 wedges in my bag. And I think that that's where you're going to score better. And really, that's one of the things, and you guys can see it because you can always look them up, is when I got to Titleist, one of the things that helped my game the most was I did a wedge fitting. And I had never done a proper wedge fitting before, even though I'd worked in the golf industry and had been through a fitting. It was more of gap fitting. It was like, all right, well, if your pitching wedge has this amount of loft, we're going to give you this next one that's going to be 4 or 5 degrees more, and then the next one 4 or 5 degrees more than the next one, so you know you're done. This was really about like, let's find the right bounce and grind combination for you and around the greens, and what types of shots are you going to be playing. And my handicap, you know, my index really dropped dramatically right away in my first, you know, 6 months of doing this wedge fitting. And so I would encourage anybody listening to it, you know, go do that. I can't promise you you're going to shave like 5 points off your index like I did. But at the same time, I had started a new job. It was really busy. And we had a second kid, so it wasn't like I had a bunch of free time, you know, or was well rested. Mm-hmm. And so I do attribute, you know, proper fitting really helps. Sorry, I kind of went a little long there, Dan, but I'm, as you can tell, very passionate about trying to go get fit.
And I mean, when you have a guy like Bob Vokey in and around the area, you might want to consider 4 wedges. It just makes sense. I remember the last time I was at TPI with you. I think you were there. He came strolling out, had a conversation with a bunch of THPers about as down to earth as they come. Do you have a good Bob Vokey story you want to tell?
I love Bob. So there's so many great stories. I would first say for everybody listening, Bob is like the cool uncle you have in your life. Just the guy that you love being around that always gives you energy. Like always. I mean, anytime I see Bob, I immediately get a smile on my face. I'm smiling right now just as we're talking about it, because he just makes you feel great. He's just this warm, wonderful human being. But I think maybe my favorite thing about Bob is if you ask him where he would like to go for lunch, his favorite place to go is anywhere where he can get pancakes, which always just like kind of breaks me up, because you know, you're talking about this guy who's in his 80s and all he wants to do is eat pancakes at lunch. And you're just like, absolutely, we can go get pancakes. Because he's just a kid at heart, which is great.
That's so funny. Is he a Waffle House guy then?
You know, we don't have Waffle House here. It's one of the great travesties of California. So if any Waffle House investors are interested or listening to this, please come to Southern California. The pancake place that is nearby our office, I think it's called Pancake House.
Okay.
So that's where we go.
That's the go-to.
Yes. But when I'm traveling, I am pro Waffle House 100%.
You know, I snuck onto your Twitter a little bit last night trying to get some content for the show today. And you actually had retweeted something. Who was it? It was someone that narrated the Waffle House experience. And I can't believe I forgot the name. And it was very funny to me because, I mean, I remember Waffle House. I don't need narration to know what I'm getting when I go to Waffle House. But it is that place you go. It's just pure experience. You get a cultural melting pot of, you know, every type of person, every condition that a human might be in, whether it's sober, hammered, sideways. It's just a good experience. You know, it's that happy place.
I love Waffle House so much that we did a quick guys trip over to Scottsdale in November, and we had agreed as a group that we were not going to eat indoors in restaurants because some of us were coming from, you know, states where that we just haven't been doing that for months. Mm-hmm. And so we actually ordered ahead, picked up our Waffle House, and ate it on the hood of our rental car in the parking lot. That's how much I like Waffle House.
Wow. It was Bourdain, by the way. I couldn't think of it, but that's who it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. And so you spent some time in Cincinnati, and you know that Cincinnatians are weirdly fond of the things that you could argue would make Cincinnati famous. I've been here 20 years. I still don't get it.
Well, I love the proud heritage of Cincinnati. I think there's some things, you know, as people are listening to this, some of the things that anyone who's been in and around Cincy would back up on there's a very interesting east side west side dynamic, which is legendary. There's also this incredible optimism every year for the Bengals, and it hardly ever comes through, right? I mean, they're one of the tortured franchises, but the optimism is always there. Versus there's always pessimism for the Reds. There's never a belief that the Reds are going to be good, but they're historically quite good, right? And they surprise people way more often than the Bengals ever do. So it's really interesting that I see the fan bases that way. And then obviously, you know, you and I have chatted about like some of the unique Epicurean delights, should we say, like, you know, beanless chili and things like that, that they have with Skyline and Gold Star and the different types of pizzas and everything. It's a interesting food town.
We got La Rosa's, we've got Skyline Chili, we've got Montgomery Inn, Grater's. If you had to pick one of those four, what would it be?
I never got into the La Rosa's pizza. I think it was like La Rosa's versus Donato's was like the shakedown. I didn't really go for either of those. I do really like Grater's ice cream.
Okay.
It may have to do with the fact that it has like the highest fat content of any ice cream in the world. It is delicious. So I would, if I was visiting Cincinnati, I would definitely hit up Grater's one of the evenings for dessert. But if I had extra time, I'd also swing into Skyline. But I'd need to make sure I was not playing golf in the afternoon. You do not want to be walking around with Skyline in your tummy.
Do you think that pizza should be cut in squares or no?
I'm not a squares guy on pizza. No, I'm a traditional slice guy. Kind of fold it from the ends and make that little narrow triangle tunnel.
You got to be careful. I kind of backed you into the corner there because I posted that on Twitter and I don't think I've ever had a tweet get that kind of engagement. And we're talking like people I don't follow, people I do follow. It went nationwide. It wouldn't shock you to know that New York and Chicago think differently. And then everywhere in between. It was pretty intense. I had no idea that posting something like that, which I thought was just a bit of a joke, would be, I'm not going to say viral, but it was definitely for me a big moment in my Twitter history.
Well, my hometown has one square slice pizza place called Dwayne's House of Pizza. And my dad's name was Dwayne. And so I don't know if that's why he would order Dwayne's House of Pizza as often as he did, but we would get that occasionally and loved it. And so it's always been kind of like, if I go home or to my hometown, I don't have a home there anymore. That's something that I would order. And I think what made them unique too is they would wrap it in kind of like a paper cover instead of putting it in the cardboard box, because they felt if you put it in the cardboard, it lost some of the flavor. It just didn't retain crispiness of the, it was a thinner pizza. So really, so in that regards, I'm at Dwayne's House Pizza. I'm pro rectangle.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things I really wanted to talk to you about with regards to Titleist products, and we've gone off course, I think, enough at this point to dive back in a little bit. I feel like, and I just put this up on screen, I feel like Left Dash is getting a lot more traction right now. I read a little bit. I know a little bit about the differences. You guys are still kind of keeping this to more of a limited experience, not something you'll find in store shelves. Can you kind of walk me down the path in which you're going with Left Dash? And maybe for those who aren't familiar with it, give an idea what it's actually trying to do.
Well, the first thing I'll say is I will defer deeper insights on this for our ball team, but okay. I'll give you my own take on it, right?
Yeah.
Because this is actually a golf ball that I play. I really like this golf ball. It is, it's really firm. So that's the first thing you have to know. If you don't want a golf ball that feels firm, especially, you know, around the greens where you're going to notice it the most, this is not your golf ball. It is very, very firm. But because it's really firm, it's also incredibly fast. It's our highest flying golf ball and has what I think we described as the longest distance potential, right? So that's another way of saying this ball goes really high and far. And for my game, it spins just fine around the greens. I live in Southern California. We've got POA greens. they tend to be very receptive, for shots in. And so you can generate, you don't need to generate as probably as much spin as you might need to with some other firm, fast courses, in the New England area or as you get down in the southern states. And so it does not spin as much. Dash does not spin as much as we see with Pro V1, and certainly not as much as Pro V1X. But for me, I really like this golf ball. Again, I like to hit it high, I like to hit it far, and I'm getting the type of greenside spin I need. And then, you're zipping through these so quickly.
Here's the one I really want to talk about. And this is my favorite from Titleist, and that's AVX.
Yeah, I can see why. I know in your game too, because you're such a high ball hitter to start with. This is a ball. So AVX is on the opposite side of the feel spectrum that I just talked about with left dash. So I mentioned left dash is firm. I mean, it's firm, but I like that. AVX is the exact opposite. It feels, incredibly soft. But what I love about AVX for a lot of players is that it does help them reduce spin. And in some cases it's unwanted spin, right? This could be somebody who's kind of battling that hard left to right tee shot, right? And we know a lot of guys struggle with that. And AVX helps in that regard. And it, again, can really produce if well fit, if you fit into AVX, and Dan, you would be the type of person who would, because you're such a high ball player, we could bring your launch down a little bit with this, help you limit some of the spin, because sometimes you were actually getting excess spin. And in that case, we can extend some of your distance opportunities with whether it's your metal woods and your long irons. And AVX is terrific at that. And again, doesn't spin, similar to left dash, doesn't spin a ton around the greens as much as our other tour balls do. Still, when you compare it to, competitive products that are out there, these are two exceptionally very good golf balls, right? They do everything very well. It's just that I'm putting them up against, the two powerhouses of Pro V1 and Pro V1X that they don't quite have the same spin characteristics. But again, we don't want anything to be exactly the same.
And that, I think that's the great part. You have mentioned wedge fittings. I have become, over the last year, I've become a huge proponent on getting fit for your golf ball just as much as anything else. I think people lose sight on that a lot. And reading through some of the material you guys have put out, I feel like you're looking at it in the same way. Not only are you adding options for golfers beyond that which has made so much success over the years, but you're also encouraging people to experience the online fittings. And Titleist Thursdays were a blast. I've been to a few of those. There seems to be a lot of emphasis being put on, hey, find what works for you, and we're confident we'll have something that will suit your game well.
I'm really impressed. The golf ball team has done a terrific job of creating these educational materials. So on our website, you can do a few different things. One, you can do a golf ball selector. You just answer a few questions and it helps point you in the right direction. You can also sign up, as you mentioned, for a virtual fitting, right? You can do a full consult with one of our fitters online, which is a terrific opportunity to really find out and ask questions about, okay, well, here's what I see with my game. And do you think this would be right for me? And so we've got that capability as well. And then finally, you mentioned that we do go out and we still are fitting golfers in person. And I think that that's always been our goal is, hey, work your way from green back to tee with a golf ball and find out what works for you. And I'm always surprised that more golfers just don't take the time to actually do the work, right? And be like, all right, I'm going to take a sleeve of this and a sleeve of this. First thing I'm going to do, I'm going to roll putts. I'm going to see how this feels off my putter. Then I'm going to back up and I'm going to start hitting shots around the green. Then I'm going to back up and I'm going to hit 50-yard shots and see what that does. And then I'm going to back up and I'm going to hit some, short iron shots. And once you kind of get in there, you think, all right, well, those are all the shots that really comprise my score at the end of the day. And if I've got the right ball for those types of things, especially when you look at the Titleist lineup, it's also going to be a great golf ball off the tee, right? Every single golf ball we make is really long off the tee. And so it helps really figure out what works for you. And then the other one that I encourage people to do, again, golf ball team is so knowledgeable on this and even better at this, but just for my own sake, I always tell people, like, pick a ball and stick with it and own that ball. Don't have, like, what I used to do, and maybe Dan, you did this when you were younger. If you unzipped my ball pocket, I would have like a hodgepodge of various stuff in there.
Right.
You know, you'd be like digging about, toss them, and be like, oh, here's this, here's that. And I kind of would, you know, was uninformed. And so I would buy different types of tour golf balls, right? I'd be like, oh, well, this brand's on sale this month, so I'm gonna buy that one. And I'll mix that in with whatever else I had. And really, that hurts you probably more than anything else. Once you find the right Titleist golf ball for you, stick with it, because that's when you dial in. Now you know how it's going to react on those shots around the green. Now you know how far your 7-iron goes, right? Like, all of those things become a lot easier when you're consistently doing that. But if you suddenly, you know, I've joked before that, like, if you took one of our tour players and then you grabbed, you know, Bill at the golf course and we swapped in golf balls, and Bill had like a mishmash of 14 different things, those guys wouldn't know what to do with their approach shots, because they wouldn't have a sense of like, all right, well, I've never hit I'll pick on a golf ball, it doesn't exist anymore. Like a mojo. Like, I don't know how far is a mojo going to go for me from 175? How much is it going to spin? Am I going to be able to hit the ball the way I want? Right. They wouldn't know. And that's why it's so important. Pick a ball, stick with it. And we've got these great choices now that not only you have, you know, classic Pro V1, you've got Pro V1X, high launching, high spinning, you've got left ash, really high, very firm, fast golf ball, and then ABX, you know, that's very soft, but again, kind of lower spinning golf ball that can work for a lot of different players. So really, you know, four awesome options. And that's why we've increased this focus on fitting and education to make sure people find the right one for them.
I love that. A little bit of a redirect on this, and it's something that was brought up earlier and on your Twitter as well. Are you the real JT?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one comes up occasionally. It's tough. I mean, all of these super, you know, successful people with the initials JT have really, I'm older than they are. So I'd like to, you know, claim that. But first, you know, it was like Justin Timberlake's kind of a big deal. Now we got Justin Thomas, huge deal. I've joked with him, you know, when we're filming with him, that I want to steal his JT logo and put that on like my hats. And he's very nice about it. He's always, well, just take some of my hats, but he wears like a size small hat, and I do not. So, but yeah, we joke about that a little bit. It gets a little tough when sometimes an email is going back and forth, someone will reference JT, and I will think they're actually asking me a question. And I quickly realize that they mean Justin Thomas.
Well, he's definitely one of my favorite players to watch on tour. I've been a fan of his for quite some time now. I love the way that he goes about the game. And I really like his story, that his dad's been with him, and you know, that he's been in golf for such a long time. This might be hard for you to answer, because I feel like your response will be the same as mine, which is to win everything. But do you see a real ceiling for a guy like him? Do you think he's going to continue to see and maybe expand on his success? Is that kind of your impressions of what is coming for JT?
He has every tool to be to be exceptional, and it's why he has been exceptional. I was looking, I can't remember exactly who posted. It might have been Lou Stagner, or someone posted the year-end rankings, top 25 for the last 4 or 5 years. And the whole thing was, look at how much shift there is in the top 25 each year. It's surprising how many names come up and come down pretty severely, except for one. Justin Thomas was in the top 4 every year. And that one really stood out to me, of just like, this guy has such a complete game that he can really do it in a lot of ways. You know, we marvel at, you know, how slight he is and how well he can, you know, hit it off the tee. Well, he's also a tremendous wedge player. Mm-hmm. He's a really good iron player, and his putter can get really, really hot. And when you have all of those things, It just, you know, he's got a gear that he can get to, right? And he's a guy who can really get it going. You know, he's got a 59 in Hawaii to his name, so he knows he can go low when he needs to, but he can also go really low. You look at, you know, when he fired a 63 at Erin Hills, right? I mean, he in on a big stage at the U.S. Open, he can really bring it in a lot of ways. And we're fortunate to have had this great relationship with him for so long in his life that we just feel like we're kind of there and we're partners with him to help him. And he talks about it in such a nice way where he just sees our team as an extension of what he calls, you know, his team, you know, that his dad's a part of and is, you know, these guys he works with on his physio and stuff like that. He sees us as just an extension of that. And I think that's a really good thing for us. But yeah, this guy is really the ceiling, you know, for somebody like JT.
Yeah, I liked there's an interview they're doing asking him who the player of the year was. And before they could even ask the question, he said me. And it's like, you know, he's not one of those guys who generally, I don't feel like, walks around with arrogance, but he has confidence in what he can bring to the table. And I really respect that. You know, you have to know what you are to be successful, but you also need to pick the times when you actually portray that. And I thought that was perfect. I loved it.
I think he's got a great personality, and I was really glad that a lot of other people got to see more of it when he did the sideline commenting during one of the matches. Mm-hmm. You know, this is obviously not something that he's trained to do, doesn't have reps doing it, but you got to see how fun he is to be around. You know, he has a great personality, but he's focused on winning, right? He knows what he needs to do. He's utmost professional, but he has fun doing it. And I think that's also what we love about him is that he gives us real feedback and he's fun to talk to. He's fun to be around. Like when we do a commercial shoot, it's an awesome day, right? This isn't, you're not worried about, you know, some prickly pre-Madonna who might be over here. No, it's a blast. He's all part of it. And likes, you know, obviously everything we bring him, he feels like is adding to his game. And when it does that, it's something that he wants to put into play right away, which is what we are, you know, that's our goal, is to help him play his best golf.
You know, I think one of my favorite things from the match you had mentioned, when he was, and obviously the amount of grief that he's given Tiger in some of these matches got kind of returned by Charlie, which is great. But when he went down to putt and he went to line up the ball, and I guess he'd lined up Tiger unintentionally, he's like, I can't do it, man. I just can't look at that. It was so funny when they were playing like alt shot. Oh man, that was good. There's something I can't believe we haven't got to. We're pretty deep into the podcast now, and it's a conversation we actually had when you first released the product. It's the ATI 425, I believe it is.
Yeah.
The new face you put on the TSI drivers this year. Super cool story there, where it's like recently declassified, using materials that existed but weren't, you know, something we were allowed to play with beforehand. Can you kind of tell me more about that story? I know you went into a little bit about the facility that it's been manufactured, but tell me how cool ATI 425 is for you guys and to put that into golfers' hands.
Well, it was something that we've got a team, it's our advanced research team that works here, and they're always looking at what are the types of engineering processes, what are types of materials, what are things that we might be able to work with in the future. And typically our first foray into those is in our concept space. And that's actually where we first used and found ATI 425. We put that in a concept driver that we made several years ago. But we used it as a crown because we couldn't actually at that point figure out how to work with it from a face material standpoint, but we were able to use it in a crown. And immediately that started to tell us, boy, we can get this. It's really strong, it's really light, and we can get it really thin. Could this allow us to go into a face material? Because that's where we could see some real benefit with it. And so the team has been working on it for years. And to be able to bring it to life in this way is something that we're really proud of. And I think it shows when you see the results we've had with the launch of TSI. We've really got a tremendous amount of golfers talking about this product. And I'm thrilled to see as many non-contract or free agent players, whatever you want to call them, that's really where you see the excitement come from of these guys are all moving into this driver. We're seeing it on the European tour. We're seeing it on the PGA tour. And obviously our guys are shifting into it. And then it's just permeating each and every level. But ATI 425 helps us power that, right? When you hit this driver and you guys have gone through it, it feels tremendously stable at impact. And part of that goes back to this unique base material. Some of it is the material itself. Some of it is the fact that we're able, because that material is so strong and so light, we can shift some other weight and a mass around in the head and really give us stability across the face and up and down the face, making, you know, your great shots are even greater and your bad shots really became good. And that's the secret to TSI. And then, you know, all those little details, the shape that we talked about before, you know, TSI 3 is really created out of a player's shape, right? That's what you want to see for a Titleist driver. You want, that's how you want a driver to look, right? That gets you fired up before you even take your first swing. And those are the little details that our team really stresses on.
The one thing I think we had the most fun with, and we sat there in the tech studio down at THPHQ with the elevator weight system. I mean, that thing is so much fun and it's just different. I like that.
Well, that one, I've got to give a great shout out to Tom Bennett and our fairway and hybrid team. And he really came, he was like, Josh, I want to have movable CG in a fairway because I think it's important. And we're looking at it. We know it's important. We've got to find what's the right way to do that. And it gets trickier there because having the weight around the skirt was not going to optimize where we needed that in a fairway. It works very well in a driver because you want help with that dynamic loft, and having more weight towards the back is always a good thing. But with a fairway, we need that turf interaction. So we don't want the weight around behind the skirt, and we still need this great turf interaction. So they came up with this idea of this elevator system where the track rises out of the center of the fairway. You're able to slide the weight really easily, and then it goes right back in. And then what our fitters really appreciated about everything is that both in the driver and the fairway, you can always see what position you have the weight in. You always know which weight is in there because, as you know, we make head weight adjustability as part of the fine tuning adjustment we want for a player. And so we offer different weights in 2 gram increments so you can increase your swing weight or decrease it. All of that you can see from outside the head. So you know immediately what you're working with if you're a fitter, and you can figure out how do I want to optimize that.
Yeah, it's definitely a different look. And I really like that. I like that you took a different sort of direction. Obviously, the internal weighting system was very, very cool and unique to you guys. But, you know, it's nice to know where, what, and how, and especially those players who like to tinker, to having that information right there so you're not second guessing it. I mean, that's a great thing.
Well, and it's one of the reasons why we believe custom is so unique, right? You and I have to, I don't know how many times we've said it's fitting at this point. Hopefully no one's doing a drinking game to that.
I hope they are.
But fitting is certainly something that's so important to us. But we make all these options available, including our hosel sleeve, right? We want to make sure that we've got independent loft and lie options, 16 different configurations to really fine tune what you're doing, right? Because it's important. And we want that on everything. We want that on driver. We want it on fairway. We want it on hybrids. It's a really important aspect to making sure you're getting the best out of your game, to dial in all those little details. And so we stress on those things all the time. And we believe that our player is going to notice that and they're going to appreciate that because their game's going to get better.
I love that. As we wrap up, Josh, I have a couple quick hitter questions for you. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Best not in line Titleist product over the last 7 years. And why is it the Titleist 816H1?
Well, great. Good call. So this was a massive shift for us from a hybrid performance standpoint. 816 really showed us what was possible from performance in a hybrid. So it was a nice shape, traditional hybrid shape, really fast, really forgiving, very high launching. So this was the first club that we actually referred to as, hey, this is a scoring club. It's not a rescue club. And Tom Bennett, who I just mentioned, who helped us develop that internal track weighting system, he leads both our fairway and hybrid groups. he would point back to that club as a turning point in our hybrid group to show like this is where the future can go. And I'm very proud of the team that we've actually been able to build on the success of that 8-16. 8-18 was a nudge better. The first TS was pretty good. And we actually have TSI hybrids coming out. I think we'll be able to talk about it in about a month.
All right.
And you guys will be really impressed with what we've been able to do there. And it's built on those foundations. So that's funny that you picked that one out. I would have picked, you put some time gaps on there, but the one I'm always fond of is an iron that I believe we launched in 1978.
Oh.
Called the AT-108s. And what I get a big kick out about those is that they feature external tungsten weighting on the toe and the heel. And they're these round weights. And a very interesting story about those round weights was that years later, when we were moving some facilities around, Scotty Cameron was moving from one building to another and found this giant box that was unbelievably heavy. And he looks in there and he realized there are these round tungsten weights. And he was like, who's taking these? I'm going to use these. And they were partially some of the inspiration for the round weights that you see underneath some of the select putters today.
Wow.
So a very cool idea that was way ahead of its time back in the late 70s of having toe and heel weighted irons that we've since been able to actually incorporate the tungsten inside the irons. So it's not in the back. It's not in a circular fashion that could come out. And so we've made huge strides since then. But I think that was a good turning point for where we could go. And then probably the other one is the classic 975D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, 975, you got 910. Like there are a couple of drivers out there you can't really compete with from this is kind of the upper echelon of what Titleist released at the time. I mean, I had both those in the bag and had a lot of time getting them out.
Exactly. I mean, 975D was our recommitment to making sure we were making drivers for the better player, right? And that's always been and continues to be our North Star is let's make sure that the best players in the world love what we're making. And so that I look at that as more of almost like a touchstone than even just this great product that we all fondly remember. But it pointed us in the right strategic direction of just like, that's what we need to do. We need to make sure that every little detail is right on these products. And when we do that, like we have with TSI, it gives us this great halo over everything we're doing. And it brings so much energy and life to our brand, to our teams. I just can't tell you how exciting it is to be able to work on stuff like that.
That's great. Twins game or Notre Dame game, both on same day, can only watch one. What's it going to be?
Oh man, that one is so hard. I'm gonna go Notre Dame, especially if it's Notre Dame football game and you get to go to Notre Dame Stadium. Every single one of those is just an incredible atmosphere. I do love the Twins so much, but I'm gonna go Notre Dame.
Final answer.
Yes, I don't have to phone.
Favorite movie of all time?
Oh, Blues Brothers. Easy.
Best quote from the Blues Brothers offhand?
Well, the my favorite quotes are ones that I probably shouldn't say, or you're going to get the explicit thing on your
There's podcast. No bleeping here.
Yeah, but obviously the we're on a mission from God is you know the easy, like most memorable one. My brother and I used that throughout our lives, whenever our parents would ask us to do something that we didn't feel was needed to be done at that moment. And so I love that. I also love the iconic John Candy, I think making his first appearance in movies when he does the orange whip line, you know, just ask the guy, orange whip, three orange whips, breaks me up every time. Easily my favorite movie of all time.
Okay. And then, what is quickly becoming my favorite part? Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, Dan, what's in your bag and why is it not 14 clubs of Titleist?
Well, that's an impossible question to answer, isn't it? You know, it's funny. I'm not going to answer that because it's super unfair for me. But I will say the reason why I selected 816 is because that thing has had unbelievable staying power in my bag. I've had one in there for, I would argue, probably close to release date, and it really hasn't left. It's had many challengers and none that have sufficiently removed it to the point where I can just move on from it, which is kind of wild. So can I just leave it at that? Can we just go there?
Yeah. Well, then next time you come visit us, I'm going to work on you with the rest of it.
Okay. And then
since you didn't really answer that one, what's your favorite golf course in the Cincinnati area?
Cincinnati? Well, I'm a member at the Oasis out here, so I'd be remiss if I didn't say that one. Been a member here for about 20 years now. It's hard to...
Yeah, water hazards. The water on, is it 18 coming in?
16, 17, 18. Yeah. Arnie's Revenge. The locals like to call it the trifecta. and I actually haven't played some of the nicer locations here. I've missed out on Kendale over at Kenwood. I've missed out on Camargo. So I can't really fully say, but I do love going out to Macatiwa. It's a phenomenal facility.
Great.
There's a couple. I have not played Coldstream. No. And there's one course that I really enjoy, and it might be too new for you. It's called Stone Lake. The
station guy made?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's really a super fun golf course. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the story behind it that, you know, this entrepreneur started his own business, sold his business, and then went and traveled the world and wanted to become a golf course architect just to see if he could do it. And he built this course. And I think that's really a cool thing that, you know, obviously a lot of us would love to have the resources to be able to be like, I'm going to fly around the world and just check out.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, sure.
You know, great golf holes and what it takes to build an incredible playing experience. And I'm going to build it in my hometown.
Yeah.
But I like that golf course. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
The other public one that I really loved when I lived there was Shaker Run.
Okay. Shaker's had a lot of movement, a lot of adjustment.
Extra 9 when I was there, and things kind of got a little dicey, and the upkeep kind of went down.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed that. And the Oasis is fun. I definitely remember losing golf balls on the last couple holes. So that's kind of a bad memory.
Well, we'll have to get you back out to try again.
Yeah. What is the course? In the U.S., we'll limit you here to U.S.
Okay.
That you would love to play that you have not played.
Oh, geez. That is crazy unfair. I don't have a lot of checked off. Can we assume not Augusta?
Sure. You can pass on Augusta.
Because, I mean, everyone's going to pick Augusta. It's like the most sought after course ever. It has to be.
So you can put Augusta ahead of like Cypress and Pine Valley.
Oh yeah. But I've heard so many good things about Pine Valley that it's like, I'm not going to say it's 1A, but it's definitely top 3 just because you can't have that many people tell you, you have to play it and not want to play it. Right.
I should point out, I've not played any of those 3 and I would not turn down an invitation.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being your caddy. I'm good with that.
All right. Anything else? Good.
No.
Anything about iron stuff? Do you have any questions on what we need to do for, you know, or what's going on in the iron world?
I'd love to hear it. I have a better idea, Josh. Why don't we have you on again?
Oh, let's do it. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, let's save let's save iron talk, and we can talk about my one-off unique Scotty Cameron that I have on the next time I get you here.
Nice, fantastic. I look forward to it. Yeah, and we've got some new drivers coming out, and new fairway, new hybrid next month. So probably an easy time for us to reconnect.
I love it. Hey, Josh, thank you so much for taking the time today. I always have a blast chatting with you. I love your passion for the game. It bleeds through very, very clearly for us. Anyone out there who isn't overly familiar with the Titleist product, aka you've been living under a rock for an obscene amount of time, please do take the time to take a look and enjoy their products. I'm a huge proponent of AVX and the new TSI Fairway Woods and Drivers. Go check them out, please. And again, Josh, thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks, buddy. Great to see you.
All right. Talk soon, everyone. If you're playing this weekend, please do play well and have a great time.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.